Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C. Former U.S. President Donald Trump indicates he will be arrested within days. Lesotho's government commits to the fight against corruption.
We have discovered that a lot of civil servants were employed outside of the legal boundaries, if I may put it that way. Some are not qualified for the work they do, so we are in the process of cleaning up.
And Malawi rescue teams use sniffer dogs to locate bodies of people after Cyclone Freddy destroys their houses.
Most of the dead bodies are under rubble, and it is becoming difficult to find out where the bodies are. So today we engaged these sniffer dogs.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is indicating he will be arrested within days. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington has details.
Former President Donald Trump, in a message on his Truth social media platform on Saturday morning, said he will be arrested Tuesday and called on his supporters to protest. He did not give details. It is known that authorities in New York City have been looking at charges against Trump in a so-called hush money case in which a former adult film performer was paid to keep silent about an alleged affair with Trump before he was president. Media reports say law enforcement has been preparing for security in and around the Manhattan Criminal Court, where Trump would surrender if he is indicted. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Lesotho, the government of Prime Minister Samuel Matekane says it is committed to the fight against corruption. This after launching an investigation into what many describe as an inquiry to weed out malfeasance and mismanagement in public institutions. The fight against corruption, local media reports so far, has led to the removal of 200 employees from the Ministry of Tourism who have been illegally employed. The state broadcaster, the Lesotho National Broadcasting Services, also had 70 people fired. Officials say the ongoing fight to weed out fraud and dishonesty will cut across all public institutions to ensure only qualified people are employed. For more on the fight against corruption, I reach Ntati Morosi. She is the Minister for Information, Communication, Science, Technology and Innovation, as well as the government spokesperson.
The new government is almost 6 months old. We are facing a big problem of public servant budget, which is a bit over what we can afford. And we have discovered that a lot of civil servants were employed outside of the legal boundaries, if I may put it that way. Some are not qualified for the work they do. So we are in the process of cleaning up, making sure that everyone who is not employed appropriately gets to be either employed appropriately or we find alternative ways of dealing with it by maybe dismissing some. But we are really in the mode to clean up the civil service.
I understand so far 200 from the Ministry of Tourism and then 70 from the Lesotho National Broadcasting Service, or LNBS. Should the people of Lesotho expect more cleanup from various ministries across board?
Yes, it's across the board. It's not only on those ministries. It's probably maybe because on those ministries it's a lot. Home Affairs, Communications, and other ministries, we still have cases like that. So it's every ministry at the moment. It's just that where there are bigger numbers, there's a lot of noise. In other ministries, it's quiet because it affects a few people.
Some people of Lesotho are calling for an investigation, so those people should be held liable, accountable for these actions. What is the government's response to this?
Yes, we have to uproot corruption totally. And if there has been corrupt actions in the past, we have to ensure that those who are liable, action is taken against them. So that's the process we are at now, investigating and trying to understand what happened. Because you'd find that people have legitimate contracts signed. So you don't know where you draw a line in terms of determining whether something is legitimate or illegal. So I would say we are in the process of understanding better, digging deeper to understand how things like that have happened. And we are not rushing into it. It's something that we are really taking our time to understand better.
So what would you say is the current state of the fight against corruption? Because the Prime Minister promised the people of Lesotho that he will weed out corruption.
We are on it. We are on it. We have made drastic changes. So far, we have the new DCEO, to the new director. We are recruiting more the right skill into DCEO, building the capacity of the organization to be able to do the work better. For the longest time, DCEO, which is a body that fights corruption, has been compared to a dog without teeth. And we are trying to turn it into a dog with the right teeth, where those who are liable, something, action is taken against them, and due action is taken appropriately at the right time, within time. So Basotho should expect that we are going to uproot the corruption. We are still on those words that we want to ensure that Lesotho is a country where everyone enjoys being a Mosotho, a Lesotho that we deserve, all of us.
Talking about the Lesotho that the people of Lesotho deserve, what is the message here to the people of Lesotho?
The biggest message for the people of Lesotho is that we have to create an enabling environment for all of us to be able to play our role in the development of the country. Whether you are a business person, you should be able to open your business on time. You should have plans which your business should grow. We should be able to have commercial cases addressed in courts on time. It's a lot of promises. We want to see Lesotho that is able to create jobs for young people, jobs for agricultural projects for the rural communities, especially because that's where we still have more arable land in the rural area. So the Lesotho we want, then the Lesotho that we think we deserve, is the one that is prosperous, where every Mosotho is actively participating in the economy of the country.
Ntati Morosi is the Lesotho Minister for Information, Communication, Science, Technology and Innovation, as well as the government spokesperson. She spoke with me from the capital, Maseru. Raised in Congo Republic, a French-speaking country in the central part of Africa, Mazach Bongu, who is now a PhD recipient, learned how to speak English by listening to Voice of America's program called Learning English while growing up in Brazzaville. Bongu emigrated to the United States on a Fulbright scholarship to pursue a master's degree program. This was before completing his PhD in global studies after returning to the U.S. following years at home in Congo Republic, where he established a business. For more on his story, I reach Mazach Bongu.
I came to the U.S. to do a master's degree as a Fulbright scholar. So I got a Fulbright fellowship when I was back in Brazzaville.
What was the motivation for you to apply?
I can say because of my mother. My mother mentioned to me the power of education and the power of a personal history. She mentioned to me that education can be a great force to empower myself. And then at that time, I knew that the best way for me to have the education that I wanted to have is to get a Fulbright fellowship. And that's why I thought America was a best a place for me to come and get my education.
Well, talking about America, I understand learning English in Congo, where you were born and raised, you listened to Voice of America, which helped you in developing your English skills. So talk to me about that process.
Yeah, so I learned English by listening to the broadcast and called Voice of America. And actually, I was in one of the regions when I was doing my my college, and then one of my teachers who taught us English at that time was always absent, you know, at the school. And then he saw my interest, my motivation to learn English. And then he told me that if you want really to learn English, you should have a radio and turn on to the broadcaster. Voice of America. They have a program on English, and if you can do that, I think you can improve your English. And that's where I started learning English. Okay, learning by listening to the Voice of America.
So, what was the motivation for you to complete your PhD or undertake your PhD course?
I wanted not only to be a scholar, but also I wanted to understand in more details some of the issues that prevail in the world and particularly in Africa. So I wanted to be, you know, part of the Africans who think, but also can apply what they think. So that's why I thought that the best way for me to pursue that dream was to do, you know, a PhD. That's from, I can say, academic perspective, but also from a personal perspective. It was also about family pride. Okay, my mother dropped out of school when she was pregnant with me. She never finished high school, and for me, it was also the way to reward all what sacrifices that my mother has done for me.
I understand you've written some books. What is your latest book and what was the focus?
I have written two books. One is The Power of Personal History, Turning One's Life of Personal Tragedies into Triumph. It's a book of my journey, surviving civil war in 1999, and then living in the forest for over a year without decent food, living in the huts made of palm leaves and trees, and then going to get a Fulbright scholarship. So it's a book about the discovery of a personal history. It's inspirational, like a power, and the sacrifices that I have to make to turn those tragedies into opportunity for growth and triumph. So the book is also The Power of Education.
What will your message be for those who are listening to you about your journey so far?
The core message that I am trying to deliver is that history is not the past. History, it is who we are. History invokes inspirations that shape our present and future conditions. I'm very happy. I never thought that one day I could be on Voice of America to talk about my story, since I learned English by listening to the Voice of America. And I want to say thank you again for giving me this platform to talk about my book.
Mazach Bongu is a PhD recipient in global studies. He spoke with me from California here in the U.S. Malawi rescue team started using sniffer dogs Friday to locate the bodies of people trapped under rubble left after Cyclone Freddy destroyed their houses. The Malawi government announced that Zambia has sent two aircraft to help with rescue efforts, and more nations are pledging to do so. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the commercial capital, Blantyre.
Early this week, Malawi search and rescue teams comprised of police, the Red Cross, and the military, were deployed to rescue people trapped in trees and rooftops by the cyclone. Lameck Kalenga is deputy chief of military operations in Malawi. He told a news conference Thursday that the military team also faced significant challenges.
Our boat capsized, and we had all the occupants of that boat submerged in water, and then they managed to swim, others to the shore, but others, they swam and held on to trees that were surrounded by water. So we had like three officers who were surrounded by water, but by yesterday, all of them were rescued.
Authorities in Malawi say there are still many areas that cannot be accessed by either vehicles or boats. However, the Zambian government Friday sent two aircraft to help the search and rescue team in Malawi access those hard-to-reach areas.
One of these aircraft is a relief aid aircraft, which is bringing relief aid to Malawi. And the other one is a MI-8 helicopter, which is going to be used to gain access to those inaccessible areas, mainly Mulanje and Palombe and Nsanje.
The Department of Disaster Preparedness in Malawi said search and rescue teams from South Africa, Switzerland, the United States, and the United Kingdom are expected to arrive soon. In the meantime, Mozambique has also pledged to assist Malawi with an aircraft. Lameck Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
March is Women's History Month, and there's no better time to celebrate the accomplishments of women. Tell us about the woman that left positive marks in your life. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA is always happy to hear your voice. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Signers of the political deal in Sudan say a transitional civilian government is expected to be named in April. Both civilian and military officials agreed Wednesday to expedite restoration of civilian rule in Sudan, where the military has ruled since a 2021 coup. But some groups are against the framework agreement, and many Sudanese are skeptical that the military will ever give up power. For VOA, Michael Atit reports from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
Signatories to the December 2022 political framework agreement met on Wednesday to discuss progress toward restoring a civilian-led government in Sudan. Speaking to the press shortly after the meeting, Khalid Omar Youssef, the official spokesperson of the civilian coalition that signed the agreement, says the meeting focused on expediting the process of drafting a new constitutional document. The document, he said, will be the basis to govern the upcoming transition in Sudan. He says participants also resolved to form a technical team that consists of representatives of the civilian coalition and military forces and other experts. The body will be tasked with reviewing the agreement and drafting the constitution. He said the meeting discussed the general progress on the political process and resolved a number of issues, including discussion on the remaining two complex matters, the transitional justice and the military and security reforms. He said those two issues are to be discussed in the ongoing political conference that should end before the holy month of Ramadan. Ramadan begins March 23rd. The December 2022 political agreement requires that the parties to the political process organize a conference to discuss issues that need a national consensus. Youssef says once discussions on transitional justice and military and security reforms are finished, the technical committee will start drafting a final political agreement that will lead to the establishment of a new civilian government in early April.
One Tamil.
He said the Joint Technical and Coordinated Committee that comprises the signatories to the agreement and the trilateral mechanism is expected to urgently draft a new time frame for the discussion of the remaining issues before signing of the final political agreement as soon as possible. some signatories to the December 2022 political agreement, which aimed at settling Sudan's internal conflict, refused to join the ongoing political process because they reject the framework and want to maintain the 2019 constitutional declaration made after the overthrow of longtime President Omar al-Bashir. Many Sudanese are skeptical the military will completely give up power regardless of any deals that are struck. Khartoum resident Sahar al-Juzuli says the October 2021 military coup negatively affected the revolution for democratic rule in Sudan and said supporters of democracy will not accept any agreement that does not serve justice. He's speaking to VOA via a messaging application Friday. Al-Juzuli says Sudanese people are now more aware of their rights and they will continue to speak up once they realize the framework agreement does not serve their interest. Our people have learned a lot, she said, and they became more aware of their political rights as citizens by participating in the revolution. The Sudanese people learned and understood the meaning of uprooting rights, she said. They became determined toward achieving the slogans of the revolution, freedom, peace, and justice. However, another Khartoum resident, Al-Nazir Adam Musa, applauded the military for what he called courageous steps to leave the political scene and allow the country to be under civilian rule. He said, what we expect from the current framework agreement is that it would help the country to overcome the ongoing political deadlock because the military is determined to hand over power to civilians. He said, this is a good gesture so far. Ibrahim El-Merghani, the head of the political bureau at the opposition Democratic Unionist Party, predicted the ongoing talks on the framework will bear fruit. There are not many differences among national political forces about the transitional issues, he said. He added, the differences will not affect the dialogue, which he forecast will lead to completion of the transitional period and sustainable democracy in the country. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum.
The South Sudan government is protesting against conditions the United Nations Security Council has attached to any possible assistance ahead of the country's election set for next year. South Sudan's acting foreign affairs minister said South Sudan needs regional and international support to hold elections but won't accept preconditions. For VOA, Waki Simon Wudo reports from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
The UN Security Council says it will provide electoral assistance to South Sudan if the government creates a conducive environment for the conduct of the elections by preventing further escalation of violence, ensuring constitutional drafting and a review process are carried out, and providing civic space for the conduct of free and fair elections. The Security Council outlined the preconditions the same day it extended the mandate of its peacekeeping mission in South Sudan, or ANMIS. The Security Council says the elections should be viewed as a phased approach and that ANMIS should focus in the near term on key conditions before providing any support for the exercise. Acting Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Dao Deng says it's unfortunate the Security Council is attaching preconditions to their support for holding elections.
Election is not an event, it's a process, and it will require people to support us. Definitely, we need the support. But it will be difficult for us to accept conditions, you know, preconditions. If you don't do this, then we'll not give you this.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe says, despite the preconditions set out by the Security Council, the conduct of the country's elections does not depend on the UN.
We are already determined to run the elections, and it is not for them. It is not they who will determine as to whether we will run the elections or not.
We are not going to run the elections with the UN or with any other person. We will do it on our own. And if anybody wants to intervene and assist us, is welcome. But it is not the condition that we should do this in order for the UN to support us. That is not the case. We will not run the elections based on the support that we'll be getting from them.
On Wednesday, when the Security Council extended the army's mandate, the council said it wants the Kiir administration to do all it can to provide a favorable environment for the conduct of a free and fair elections. It also wants the Kiir administration to make immediate progress on key milestones toward peaceful elections, including adopting a constitution and required legislations, as well as effective implementation of security arrangements as stipulated in the 2018 revitalized peace deal. Deng says the government is committed to conducting elections by the end of the transitional period, which has been moved back to the end of 2024, but preconditions on aid may pose a challenge to the process.
Definitely the issue of space is a democracy, one of the pillars of democracy. So we cannot restrict people to talk, not to travel. Political Parties Act has a very clear, mechanism on how political parties can be able to undertake and conduct themselves.
The Council's resolution reaffirmed the army's role of supporting implementation of the peace agreement, monitoring, investigating and reporting on violations of international humanitarian law and human rights, including rape and other forms of sexual violence. Deng says while the government welcomes the extension of the army's mandate for another year, it has reservations about certain language in the resolution.
When we said we welcome, we don't want to be seen in controversy with them, in conflict, because the language of the mandate is what the government have a lot of reservation.
The mandate also authorizes the armed UN peacekeepers to use necessary means to ensure effective, timely and dynamic protection of civilians under the threat of physical violence and to prevent, deter and stop violence against the civilians, including politically driven violence, particularly in high-risk areas. It allows the peacekeepers to promptly engage any actor preparing or engaging in attacks against civilians, camps for the displaced, and sites where armies is protecting civilians. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Season 3 of the Basketball Africa League is here. Starting off in Dakar from March 11th to March 21st for the Sahara Conference, then heading to Cairo from April 26th to May 6th for the Nile Conference, and the excitement continues to build in the finals in Kigali from May 21st to May 27th. Tune in and follow the BAL starting this Saturday on The Voice of America.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Rwanda Energy Group Basketball Club tasted their first Basketball Africa League BAL 2023 defeat in the Sahara Conference after they were beaten by Stade Malien 64-84 on Saturday at Dakar Arena. Prior to the game, REG had already qualified for the playoffs that will take place in Kigali in May after winning three conference games in a row. Saturday's game was not only the second win for Stade Malien in four games, but a major boost for the Malians, who are pushing for their first playoffs in May in Kigali. Zambia coach Avram Grant says the door is open for any Zambian player who has quality, passion and the will to fight for the Chipolopolo jersey. Grant says he wants to build a winning team for the Chipolopolo, who are trying to recover from three successive AFCON qualification flops. Speaking during a media engagement ahead of the back-to-back AFCON 2023 qualifiers against Lesotho to be played on the 24th and the 26th of March 2023, coach Grant agreed that the marches will be difficult.
They need to prove themselves, and who will prove himself will stay in the squad. And who will prove himself in the league, in any league that he's playing, also the door is open for him. I want to tell you that it was very difficult after our 3 days with the local players. I enjoyed very much. It was very difficult to choose between the self. Even the players that I choose in their position, there is a player that the difference is not so big.
Staying with football news, CAF has confirmed that the 45th CAF Ordinary General Assembly scheduled for the 13th of July 2023 will be hosted by Benin Republic. This is the first CAF Ordinary Assembly to be hosted in the Benin capital, Cotonou. Previously, Benin hosted the 2021 CAF Confederations Cup between Algeria's JS Kabylie and Raja Club Athletic of Morocco. In table tennis news, Africa's top-ranked player, Arnaud Quadri's brilliant run at the World Table Tennis Singapore Smash came to an end at the weekend following a 4-0 loss to Brazilian Hugo Cadernaro. The quarterfinals game played at the Infinity Arena saw the Nigerians succumb 11-7, 12-10, 11-2, 11-2 to Cadernaro. This ends the journey at the tournament for Africa's top player, having earlier defeated Japanese Tomokazu Harimoto 3-love in the round of 16. In mixed martial art news, Britain's Leon Edwards retained his welterweight title in front of his home fans as he beat Nigerian Kamaru Usman by majority decision at the UFC 286 in London. The victory over Usman sees Edwards make his first title defense since beating the Nigerian in August 2022. Kamaru Usman had entered the octagon looking to rebound from his title loss to Leon Edwards this past August. That setback, which was a brutal head kick knockout, had marked Usman's second career defeat and his first loss since 2013. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments, or greetings. Dial the international code +1 202-258-3076. The number again is the international code +1 202-258-3076.
Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. In 2013, President Xi Jinping of China enunciated a concept which states a vision of a community of shared future. That concept has further been developed and has included another concept of a community of shared security, from which the Treaty of China on Security has been formulated. Only recently, China has called for the observation of basic human rights, but underlying that these human rights are diverse. It is also important to point out that the issue of shared interests is not in hierarchical terms. The emphasis is more on community rather on the rights of individuals. And also, in the decades following that pronouncement in 2013, many international instruments, documents, and resolutions have embraced this concept of a community of shared future. In contrast, you have in Europe a petition that there is a European value, and it is that value that leads to the policies being followed by Europe. In addition, there is an attempt to call on other values of the world to align themselves with European values. These pronouncements have produced what academics were saying 2 or 3 decades ago would lead to a clash of civilization. United Nations and other institutions have organized groups over the years to mitigate this clash of civilization. But things are getting more tense, and Africa finds itself in a rather uncomfortable position. In trying to further the concept of European values, the power of the purse has been cleverly used, and Western NGOs have been roaming in the developing countries, particularly in Africa, in promoting these values. Some African countries quietly have been worried about this clash between European values with their own traditional norms and practice. Many leaders have restrained themselves. But last week, President Museveni of Uganda went to the Ugandan parliament and criticized heavily Western countries for trying to impose Western values in the African continent. He referred specifically to the issue of homosexual practices and attempts to liberalize these practices or punishment. And he noted in the parliament that he would oppose these attempts by the West. The members of parliament were not all convinced of President Museveni's stand, because their views are more in line with Western values, particularly in terms of the courts and the judiciary. But this is not only confined to Uganda. Last week also, there were large-scale demonstrations in the port city of Mombasa in Kenya. And there, the people again were protesting what they say were Western values being imposed upon them, in contrary to their own traditional norms and practice. The president of Kenya was sympathetic and said he would give them his support. This clash will become more widespread, because other parts of Africa and the developing world are not acquiescing the question of adapting to European values. However, the time may be now for Africans to get into dialogue, perhaps with their Western partners, to see to what extent an accommodation could be met in order to maintain peace and tranquility in the African continent. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
How do you get international news? Radio, television, social media, or all of the above? Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp. Leave a message, comments, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code plus 1, then 202-258-3076.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Gabon, 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 Gab corner and I'm never, never, never alone. You've been gone too long, Mpulu Mpulu Hati, baby, come home. I know you think it's over, but it's saying, baby, come over. Kikondugu tiguwe, kimu selusana. Kikondugu tiguwe, kimu satandwa. I ain't going nowhere, baby. I ain't going nowhere, baby. Kiabonga baba.
Today, I'm not feeling like that. Today,
to go. I know she pull when them see me, them say I do fire. They say Babylon man for wire. And they got to know, they got to know, yeah, you are true. Them a free, them say me a target. Them say me can't shine in a market. No, them never started. No, them never started. Cause I can burst, you can burst. Tell me what's the point if we both get hurt. Now you're acting like you never knew my word. Babylon trying to cross my turf. It's a water vibe. Now I'm standing out that I'm fucking hurt. Instead, they want me to be passing my gun. We just tell them that they run, 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 run.
Suavemente, besame. Sors de la tête, je me suis demandé. Suavemente, besame. Sors de la tête, en moteur italien.
Suavemente, j'ai traversé la mer. J'oublie pas ceux qui se lèvent tôt pour un salaire. J'aime pas me vanter, je fais ce qu'il y a à faire. Et j'aimerais que les miens sortent tous de la galère.
Quitter la galère, haraga dans les rues de Palerme. Une petite italienne qui m'aime et qui me fait les papels. Oh bébé, t'es douce, maman, comment t'es soirée. Les yeux revolver, c'est une beauté criminelle. Suavemente, besame.
People don't really know you. They don't really know you. Cause you see people.
Fight till the day I go call you mine. Ah, all day, all day. Menkumi, baby. In sweetie, in jolly. Menkumi, lady. Ah, oh my baby, you're a queen. Compliment me as a king. Get the boy and swam up a door, baby. Bra, left in my mom. Bra, left in my mom.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington.
Direct from Washington. The Voice of America, VOA.
Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Mike Hove, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, death is the key that will even open a miser's coffin. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.